Well, brethren, as you've been aware for a few weeks now, we have some visiting brethren among us, and one of those is Brother Bob Goodman, who we've asked to serve us this morning, and we're in for a real treat. He's going to present to us Pastor Russell's World Tour. Pastor Russell's World Tour. Brother Bob.
Well, good morning, everyone. We are just delighted to be here this weekend. We've had a wonderful time, some special family time with our son being married to Sarah Whitaker this weekend. We're all rejoicing in that, as I know all of you are. And we appreciate so much all the love and support of the brethren here. You know, when we see these young people, we realize that, you know, this really is a village that helps guide and direct and bring up our young people, and just a wonderful environment indeed. And we wanted to also bring you warm love and greetings from your brethren in Orlando. There are a few of us here. And also love and greetings from the New Brunswick Convention. I was there last weekend, and they wanted their love sent as well. This morning, you won't need your Bibles. We're going to take you on a world tour. And this is really called Pastor Russell's Round the World Tour. And it recounts his tour in 1912. If you're not familiar with this, and I really wasn't before I started looking, this is actually documented in the convention report, and I will tell you, figuring out the exact sequence and the times and the dates is a little bit of a detective work, so I've tried to indicate the relative dates here. If any of you have any corrections, please let me know, because sometimes we have to make suppositions. I found in preparing it that they would put the dates of when they mailed out the mailing, which was at, you know, after the fact, obviously, and then they would refer back to prior events. So it was kind of interesting piecing it together. Most of this is in black and white, and because the pastor at times is a little bit difficult to pick out, I've put yellow arrows above him so you'll see him. So we're going to take you on his world tour, and you're going to see the pastor in ways I bet you've never seen him before. His goal in this tour was, it says this was on his page, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached into all the world for witness unto all nations. And then, of course, we know how it ends, and then the kingdom will come. And so we're going to retrace his steps, and also hopefully give you some commentary and some insights from our perspective as to what was happening. You know, I think when we're beyond the veil, when we look at the 144,000, there's going to be 144,000 stories about sacrifice, about trials and tribulations, about decisions that were made. And I think we can look at this little chapter in the pastor's life and gain some insights to him really as a very active sacrificer as well. Now, he was called the people's favorite preacher. And one of the things that was interesting to me was I found out that until after this tour, he really wasn't as widely accepted. Yes, he was published in a lot of newspapers, but they kind of did a pick and choose on his sermons. And then after this, it really dramatically changed. And that's chronicled in the convention reports. And so the objectives of the trips were stated to ascertain prevalent social and religious conditions. You know, the pastor knew about what was happening in religion in Europe and also in the United States and Canada, obviously. But the rest of the world was a little bit of a mystery, and he wanted to ascertain what the religious conditions were like, you know, really to tailor their ministry to address that. Secondly, they wanted to evaluate the methods and results of conducting foreign missions by the churches. So they had already been doing foreign witness work, and you're going to see quite a bit of fruitage as we get into the India work. And so they wanted to assess that. You know, I've had the privilege of going to Africa a few times, and in Africa they call this feet on the ground. And what it really means is that you actually have to be there and experience the culture and talk to the people to really get a true assessment of what's happening. So we think this was very valuable as well. And his last objective was to draw international attention to the truth movement and its unique harvest message of that time. And you'll remember this was before television. And so this chronicle that was occurring in newspapers was really a world travel log. And so it had an interesting air there. People would be interested in seeing conditions around the world that they wouldn't normally see. And in the process of doing that, the pastor was witnessing to the truth as well. Now, he was actually a very savvy marketer. You'll remember he was a haberdasher, and they had their men's shop, and he really knew how to market and took advantage of every opportunity, really, for the Lord's service. And so we don't see this as out of character or out of context of his Christian sacrifice as well. And that's probably something that we can learn as well. You know, we have the scripture about being instant in season. And I think you're going to see some examples of that. In fact, I know you will on this trip. And so he says, the object of this tour was to arouse in the public mind greater interest in his movement and message. Okay? Now, who went on this tour? Well, we had Pastor Russell and six other elders that were very prominent in the truth. And you see them with their names there. And this was really an assessment, so they split up a few times during the trip where groups would go off and do different things. So it was a very effective way of doing it. And then he got the input from all these different brethren who had different perspective. Kind of reminds me of the apostles, you know. If you look right behind him, the General Hall is standing behind him, or Colonel. I'll have to see if it was Colonel or General. But there was all different types of disciplines that were represented here. And we think this was a very wise thing as well. Get different perspectives of what's happening. And so here's the pastor in General Hall and Professor Lindquist. And although Professor Lindquist did not go along, they were helping in the preparation of this tour. And so they're discussing matters to come and what their plans are. Now, originally they had planned to go completely around the world. And then after India, they were going to go down into equatorial Africa and then go out through the Giza Pyramid and up into Europe. Because of timing, and you'll see India became very consuming, they had to accelerate their plans, and so they didn't get down to equatorial Africa on this particular tour. And so as we look at the convention report, you'll remember if you've seen it that they list out convention discourses that were given. And these are the ones that are listed in the various places. What you're going to find out is this is only a fraction of the talks that were given on the trip. And one of the things I tried to do in this is to document the various things that he was talking about at different points on the trip. One of the marvelous things about not only the pastor but all these elders is they tailored their message to the particular people at hand. And so I think that's very significant, you know, as we have opportunity, tailor the message to the audience. And you'll see they didn't do many repeats. And so it started out in New York. They traveled to our fair city, the Windy City here in Chicago, down to St. Louis and San Antonio. And this is on December 4th, 1911, they were in Chicago. So beginning of December, they started out. They took the Wabash down to St. Louis where there was a class. And there they spoke on calls of those in bondage. And, of course, what they were referring to was those in bondage of the religious systems to their doctrines and creeds. Very timely. So that's how he addressed that class. Then they proceeded on down to Dallas. Here's the pastor standing out in front of a train with the number from the committee that went with him. And the caption on the picture was the pastor and friends talking it over. So they're discussing their upcoming trip, obviously in anticipation and excitement as well. They proceeded on down to Dallas. And here's a picture of him in Dallas in a motor car looking very dapper in his top hat. Now, I will tell you that the pastor dressed well, and you're going to see he dressed well on the entire trip, despite the 100-degree heat along equatorial Asia. He dressed very well. That at one point was a little bit of a point of contention was, you know, did he dress too well? And his response to that was that he was a representative as the Lord, and as such, he chose to dress very smartly. And we think that's not only a proper motivation, but also a very good thing as well. And in Dallas, he gave the class there two different talks. I didn't find the subjects of those particular talks. And this is on December 7th, so 3 days before he'd been in Chicago. Of course, traveling by train is not like traveling by plane, so there was quite a bit of transit time. And so you see, this is very much a working trip, very much. He continued on down to San Antonio, Texas, and he was there on the 8th the next day. And that's where you really caught the train that would go to the West Coast. So there was only a few lines that went all the way east-west, and they were located there on December the 8th. They continued on to Los Angeles straight through, arrived on December 10th. And once again, I'll tell you, this was definitely a working trip. In the morning, he gave a talk on the wrath of God revealed against all unrighteousness. That's what he did for the Los Angeles class. For those of you that have spoken, you realize that when you give a talk, as you give of yourself, you're tired after that. Well, undoubtedly the pastor was tired, but then at 3 o'clock that afternoon, he gave a public witness, which is the true gospel. So, very, very active trip. And you'll remember they didn't really have nice PA systems, so you had to project and be very dynamic in that day to speak and be heard. So he gave two talks in that day, once again, suited to his audience. So he was discussing what is the true gospel. They proceeded from there and headed up to Oakland, California, which is where the train went. And they had a joint meeting of both the Oakland and San Francisco classes. So those two classes came together. And he gave a talk on the future work of the church after the millennial age. So sometimes rather than say, well, did the pastor ever address the ages to come and what was going to happen? Well, based on this report, yes, he did give a talk on that. And you can go back. Many of these sermons are transcribed in the convention reports from 1912. So if you want to read some of these, not all of them, but some of them are, you can afford yourself that. The next day, once again, a very active trip, they prepared to go across the Atlantic. And they were on the Shino Maru. And by our standards, it was a moderate-sized ship, 550 feet long, 63 feet wide, and about 40 feet high. And this was only the third voyage, so this was a very new ship as well. And in its day, it was really a luxury liner. Being less than 2 football fields long, in our day, it wouldn't be, but in their day, it was very luxurious. And so many from the class came out on the dock as well as public, because there were others on the ship, obviously. And it says, as we lifted anchor at 1 o'clock, an immense crowd of people on the wharf waving their handkerchiefs to their friends abroad. It was an impressive sight. And you see Pier 34 there in San Francisco as they leave. Now, they went out, obviously, through the Golden Gate, and said, soon we passed out through the Golden Gate and were on the great Pacific Ocean on an average depth of 2 miles and 6,000 miles across. Now, the Pacific is, very, very big ocean. We've had the privilege of going to Australia, and when you fly 18 hours on a plane to get there from L.A., you realize the immenseness of that ocean. And it was probably a little bit unnerving to think about going across 6,000 miles where it's 2 miles deep. But of course, the Lord was in charge. And I want you to note now, as we start to look at the pictures, I think, a lot of times there aren't statements of exactly what was going through their minds. But as we see the type of pictures that they're taking, I think we will get some idea of the impact that this had on the pastor and the rest of them. So they said the crew was mostly Japanese and some Chinese. And, of course, since this ship was out of Japan, that would be expected, a full complement. Now, you might think that this was a luxury trip and therefore they were relaxing and getting some well-deserved rest. Well, It's said that Brother Russell had two stenographers that he'd been keeping busy. And he kept them busy the entire Pacific voyage. And so it was a very busy working trip, because you'll remember the watchtower and all of that mechanism had to be kept going in their absence. And this was not a two-week trip. This was a four-month trip that was going on. And so they kept them very busy with the work of the Lord. And it says, the rest of the committee met each morning for a dawn study, which Brother Coombe conducts. Occasionally, some of the passengers come in also, but the hearing ears are few and far between. So not unlike our day, where we might get a few come in and have some interest in the truth, but by and large not. But of course, the brethren stayed resolute. And they continued all the way over to Honolulu. Now, at this point, when they enter Honolulu, they're about a third of the way across. And Honolulu, this is a picture of the harbor, and it was called the Paradise of the Pacific. And it was very lush and green and tropical. Now, when they got there, it was just kind of a layover, but an opportunity occurred. And this is just another evidence of the pastor taking advantage of every opportunity. It says, providentially, a gentleman came onto the ship to meet a party of missionaries whom they had been expecting, but failed to arrive on the ship. So what do you think the pastor's response was? Well, he went with the committee, and they went to the Christian missionary school and gave a talk on what is the gospel. So undoubtedly, a sermon that was, or discourse that was, well suited to his young audience and those hearing ears. So they got the message that the Lord wanted them to get. And so this was a very nice opportunity. Once again, they were just laying over before their voyage to Japan. And so they continued towards Japan. Now we're continuing into the Western Pacific. And once again, Brother Russell takes advantage of every opportunity. On Sunday, Brother Russell, by request of the captain, had charge of the divine worship, and he gave a splendid address for 3/4 of an hour covering the entire plan. And how appropriate, because it was the entire complement that was on the ship that, you know, would come down to this Sunday worship. And so what did the pastor give? A general plan talk, exactly as we would expect. And they noted many things. You know, it was lush and tropical and beautiful as they left Hawaii. And this was a picture of the sunset on the Pacific. Now, December 25th came along. And right before this, on December 23rd, they were just in the process of crossing the international date line. And when you do that, you lose a day. So they went and went directly from the 23rd to the 25th, which was Christmas. And it's interesting, no, it says, as Monday the 25th is Christmas, Brother Russell has been invited by the captain to give an address appropriate to the occasion. And they will have the ship decorated, and we will have a high time. So the pastor took advantage. You know, some say, well, did he celebrate Christmas? Well, he was given an opportunity to give a Christmas message, and so he did. And what they did is they decorated the ship with several hundred flags and various trinkets, and they also had a real Christmas tree. So you can imagine here a very festive ship decorated with a Christmas tree, and the pastor up there giving an appropriate address for the Christmas season. Here they are continuing across, and you see, you can make out a smile on the pastor as he looks out at the beautiful Pacific Ocean. They arrived in Japan on January 30th. And I want you to note the types of things that they're taking pictures of. So I think what we see here is that all the committee really had a little bit of what we call culture shock, because they were in a completely different culture. Now, having gone to Africa, I can totally relate. The first time you go, it's very, very different. And so it says, our first rickshaw ride. And it says, waiting for us, which to our Western eyes are very strange things. They are called rickshaws. They are like a large baby buggy on two wheels with a pair of shafts. The whole thing is pulled by a man who gets between the shafts, trots along, sometimes miles without stopping. And soon each of us were seated in one of these queer conveyances and trotted off with our human horses. So one of the things you'll note as they went into the into Asia was they were quite taken by how human beings were used as beasts of labor in every facet. And you're going to see this even more as we get into China and down into South Asia as well. And here they are out in front of the Imperial Hotel where they stayed overnight. And it's kind of interesting because the rickshaws were lined up just like taxi cabs out in front of the Marriott Hotel here. So no different. And you see the pastor once again with his top hat on, same as he had in the rickshaw. And the next day it says, this was a big day for us as arrangements had been made for two meetings at the YMCA. So there were Christians in Japan. It says fully 1,300 were present, mostly young Japanese men at the afternoon meeting, 700 at the evening service. So they had quite a showing. And so we see in Japan there were some roots of Christianity. And once again we see the pastor in his top hat and in a rickshaw getting ready to go. The pastor spoke on the signs of the times and later on the great hereafter. So undoubtedly they had talked with some of the Japanese brethren and gotten a feel for what would be appropriate, and these were the two topics that were chosen. It says, we rode through the city and in and out into the country, a ride of about three quarters of an hour, until we came to the home of really the president of the ship line that they had come over on, and they were going to just have a cordial meeting with him as well, as a thank you. And once again, you can see the pastor. Now, this is a pretty grainy shot, but you can see him in his rickshaw, and you can generally pick him out by his hat and his beard. And here he is ready to start once again. And when they got there, the committee was seated with the committee, was seated with Pastor Russell as well as some of the other friends, and some of the Japanese friends standing behind. Now, if you look to the far left, you'll see the one sister that came on the trip, Sister Wilson. And you'll see her throughout the trip as well. And they thought that the costumes, as he described it, for the Japanese children were quite unusual. And, of course, the little flip-flops that they wore, the little slats. And they were quite taken by the fact that you had to take your shoes off when you went in their homes and meeting places. And also by the way that the children were carried. Remember, once again, as a witness, he also had a travel aspect to the pictures that were taken, so that when they sent these reports back, for many in the United States and really around the world, this was the first time they'd ever seen the Japanese culture. So it was a travelogue, and that would draw people in, and consequently he'd be able to give them the message as well. Now, one of the things that really, really impacted them, there was quite a bit of verbiage on this, was when they got to Nagasaki, Japan, which is in western Japan, they're getting now ready to go on a ship to China and then to South Asia. They had to coal the ship. And, of course, these were all steam and coal ships, and it says about 750 people worked on each side of the ship, so 1,500 people. And they would pull up in these Chinese junks full of coal, and then they would lash together these bamboo ladders that went up the side, and they would pass baskets of coal. And so they placed 3,000 tons of coal in 6 or 7 hours in this ship. And so they killed this with just mass labor. And once again, they were quite struck as to how it wasn't animals or machinery that was doing this. It was whole families of people. And the people would get paid what we would consider a real pittance for doing this, but they didn't have any other jobs. So they were really quite impressed and took a picture of that. They went on to Shanghai on January 9th. They arrived. And here they were quite taken. They were shocked. I don't think that the pastor had ever seen starvation on the level that was seen in China. And you can see the ribs sticking out. It says the conditions in China in some parts is something terrible. Certain sections are overflooded with water and thousands of people are dying daily of starvation. So this was really a shock to the pastor. When you think back to the pictures of Japan, relative prosperity, pretty good conditions. Not what we had in the Western world, but still not bad. Now he saw places where children were starving on the streets every day. And part of the group went into an inland city, and they were quite struck by this as well. So this is in the area of northern China, Shanghai. They proceeded on down to Hong Kong, which is another region, and they arrived there on January 11th. Once again, you'll realize it takes them a while to get there, a couple of days. And here they were impressed in how this was quite a cosmopolitan area with pigtails, sampans, rickshaws, electric cars, sedan chairs, English shops, and Chinese signboards. So because this has been a major port of a British colony, by the pastor's standards, it was quite well off and quite affluent. And they didn't have the starvation and flooding problems that they did in the north here. But they were quite taken by things that they saw, of course. Barbers at work on the roadside. They saw a street procession with the Chinese carrying a dragon. Remember, this was just after New Year's. So they were quite taken by this. Of course, this is something all of us have seen in many movies and on TV and so forth. But realize, for many eyes, this was the first time they'd ever seen this culture at all. This is quite spectacular. And in the British section, as you can see, it looks quite nice, like a European city. But right below this, it says, below in a huddle crowded tenements, a quarter of a million Chinese, part of the groaning creation waiting for the times of restitution when Messiah sets up his glorious kingdom to bless not only these poor Chinese, but all the families of the earth. So I think he was quite affected by this when they saw this mass poverty. So they see the affluence up here. They see these people as beasts of burden. And then you look down on this tenement where people are living in squalid conditions, a quarter of a million of them, and they were quite taken by that. And he really saw this. Once again, this was his message in 1912. On January 14th, they took a side trip down to Manila from Hong Kong, and they said it was unusually rough, and it took them 2 days and three nights to make the trip. And there, General Hall, they were brought into a military club, and so General Hall put on his military garb, and they gave discourses. And once again, I want you to note how they tailored it to the particular needs. So General Hall gave a talk on the Bible from a soldier's standpoint. And so since it was military, that was his audience. One of the other brethren gave a talk on the Bible from a merchant's standpoint. And the third gave the Bible from a doctor's standpoint. And so you see how they drew their audience in. They hooked them, they drew them in, and then they brought forth their message. And the pastor, once again, now not in a rickshaw but a horse-drawn cart, he said, we have found that one of the papers had voluntarily announced that we had not arrived and also published a lot of stuff, and we'll assume it was not good stuff, so bad stuff about Pastor Russell, which they copied from the Brooklyn Eagle. Thus, you see, Satan also came. So it wasn't without opposition that he was there. But very shortly after they gave their talks, of course, they were well received. And all of that was passe after that point. But the adversary continued to challenge them throughout their world trip. And at the meeting, they had 1,000 present in the Philippines. And the pastor gave a talk on where are the dead. And I will tell you that going over to Africa earlier this year, I was asked to give a public witness. And having worked on this talk for a considerable time, this topic is very pertinent. And so this is actually the theme of a talk that I gave in Africa as well. And once again, I think we need to suit our message to whatever the audience is this is yet another example of that. They returned back up to Hong Kong on January 20th, and here he had a picture of Chinese boys eating rice and not probably well fed by our standards, but not starving to death either. And here's the pastor at Hong Kong meeting with some of the brethren there, and he gave a talk on the future state. Now they're going to continue from Hong Kong down to Singapore and Penang. And so on the 26th, they arrived in Singapore, and they went to the Chinese Anglo Mission School. Remember, once again, he said he wanted to assess the state of what had happened with witness activities and with missions. And so at the Wesleyan Church, he gave a talk on Daniel 12. And they were quite taken by the lush tropical vegetation. Now they're more in equatorial Asia, so it takes on a very tropical character. And they took pictures of the botanical garden. We're just showing you a few. So once again, they're struck really by the lushness of this. And here's a picture of Pastor Russell in a pith helmet with a smile on his face. I had one of our young brethren ask me, well, do you have any pictures of the pastor smiling? And part of the reason they didn't smile in pictures is you had to hold that pose for a little while. And so it generally was not the case. But here he is smiling. And why is he smiling? Well, I'm told he had a great sense of humor. And what happened was, it says Pastor Russell was left by his rickshaw man who saw the camera and was afraid of it. He dropped down the yoke and ran off when he saw them take out the camera. And so you see Pastor Russell kind of chuckling here at the event. Later that day, he spoke in the Wesleyan Church on divine espousals. And then once again, they boarded the ship. So this was a very active trip. They were going, going, and going. So here he is on the ship now looking out on the ocean, and he switched from his top hat to a pith helmet. Now they're heading down to Penang, and they arrived there on January 27th, and they're in the botanical garden. And once again, you'll see the pastor now under umbrella, and the temperatures were like Chicago yesterday, 100 degrees. And so it was very hot. And rather than dressing down, you'll notice that the committee just uses umbrellas to help keep the sun off. So they still wanted to look very good. And you see Sister Wilson there in the middle as well. They continued on now down to southern India, to the island of Colombo. And they arrived there on January 31st. And now they begin their Indian odyssey. And so when they arrived at Colombo, Brother Driscoll, who was already there, boarded the ship, and he was to take them around to various areas where they had been doing witness work. And the first thing the pastor did, here you see a picture of him without a helmet, without any kind of hat on, and he is preaching on Leper Island. And he gave a talk on leprosy as a picture of sin. How appropriate for those. There were over, I think around 290 on that island that had leprosy. Now, we talk about sacrifice, and I think we have an example of sacrifice here. In fact, I know we have an example of sacrifice. When we go to Africa or any equatorial area, we take anti-malarials so we don't get malaria. They didn't have those. When we go to all these places, here he is, he's going out on Leper Island. They didn't even really understand fully what leprosy was yet. And the reason the lepers were on an island was to isolate them. And yet the pastor went out there and witnessed to them. And so what a wonderful spirit of sacrifice, and really, leaving himself in the Lord's hands as well. And here he is speaking to the women lepers. And then also he gave an address to the men lepers as well. And then afterwards they had to carry him back. So here are two of the brethren carrying him back to the boat through the mud and muck back to the river boat so they can exit and then head back over to India. Now, while they're still on Colombo, they were quite taken by the people and the poor level of living conditions. I think he was quite struck. You know, when you just travel in what we now consider first world countries, you don't really get the impact of how impoverished and how needy the rest of the world is. But here, I think, documented by their pictures, we were seeing the impacts of those things. Now they continue over to the Indian mainland, Travancore, and they arrive there on the 7th, and they're mounting a motor car. Now, this motor car was apparently fairly new in the area, and so they drew great crowds just by driving around in the motor car, which the pastor took advantage of course. And here they are crammed in. You'll see them basically, there's three rows of brethren sitting on top of each other, pretty much. And they pass through a village. And you'll notice that they took every opportunity, so they put signs on the outside of their motor car announcing the gospel message and various things like that. So there's a great deal of interest. And like most primitive countries, they were quite taken by the way this was their marketplace, typical marketplace with people and little grass huts. Now, as they started to approach their end point where there were brethren, they started to see a reception forming, and the brethren would come out with flags. And they were quite taken by this. And you'll notice here that there's a sign that says you can read welcome where the arrow is, but if you look up and down to the right of that, you'll see it's Russell. And so they're welcoming Pastor Russell. And so now he's got quite a crowd. In fact, you see that it's such a large crowd that they're kicking up the dust in the extremity of the picture. And the procession was over a mile long. This was his welcome procession. So this was a little different than he'd seen in Japan or China or even the Philippines. And here the brethren are walking along behind the motor car. This was looking out the back, and now more of a pan shot where you can see the silhouette of the pastor in his pith helmet. And they are escorting him here along the route. And not only that, the welcome included a band from the International Bible Students Association and the committee in Travancore. And here he is, almost like Hawaii, he's being decorated with a laurel of flowers. And he's sitting with Brother Davey, who is on your left, and Brother Davey was really the one that was heading up the activities in this part of India. So you see, India today is a fertile ground. There's a lot of brethren there, and we see the roots even back in the pastor's day. And so this is the auditorium at Russell Purnham, and there were discussions there, not formal discourses, on the Bible from a perspective. And you know what the three perspectives, from a soldier, from a merchant, from a doctor. So they reuse those same themes here to very effectively address the brethren. And this is Brother Davey right in the middle in the dark jacket. And you see some of the Indian helpers in the truth movement there. So the truth movement, despite the conditions in India, was very healthy. There were a lot of brethren. And the pastor here is in from Bethel at Russell Purnham, and that's a meeting place, and you'll see that in just a few slides. So you see him here talking to Brother Davey about something as they come in. Here they are coming up the walk towards the auditorium where he gave a talk on glad tidings. This schedule is really tremendous, isn't it? I mean, every day doing one or more talks. Here's what they call Bethel, a meeting place. And this is not unlike what we would see in Africa, where either you meet under a tree or under a big tarp or under a building that they put up that's open to the air. And this is typical of their meeting place in Bethel. And while they were there, they were sung to by many of the girls that came out. So there's great enthusiasm here. And, of course, everyone wanted to get their picture made with the pastor, so this is some of the brethren there with the native workers. So what Pastor Russell found was a very active truth movement in India, and I think this really charged him up. I think later in the trip where they got a little bit delayed and missed part of Africa, that was part of the reason. He was with a group of very core truth brethren in India, and it was hard to get away. And here's a group from Russell Purnham once again, and he gave a talk on fellow servants. So you see his theme is really tailored to his fellow servants there. And wherever Sister Wilson would go, In the ox cart, a number of sisters would walk along with her. So wonderful hospitality from the Indian brethren. And here you see Brother Pyle with one of the Indian children, and he apparently really was quite affectionate with children. And now they're getting ready to go to their motor car. Wasn't quite like our parking lot where we worry about if we're, you know, at the space closest to the door, as you'll see. So they start their journey to the motor car. They have to go across the tapioca fields and then through the village. And finally, they arrive at their double-decker bus. And this is how they were able to travel at this part of the trip. And as they went to a new location, the brethren would, of course, in hospitality, carry their luggage for them. And so as they arrived at this new location, they gave a talk on God's people. Once again, now he's really addressing the brethren that are there, because the truth is very strong in this part of India. And so there was an enthusiastic band at this city. They came out. You see some brass and an accordion and a drum. And afterwards, they kind of centered around this Russell Purnam. And so afterwards, they returned back to that area. And this is the first tabernacle in Travancore. So this was a building dedicated to the Lord there. And, of course, they had services there as well. And the other nice thing was that they had a traveler's bungalow. And you'll see some of the brethren relaxing here after some arduous trips. And they started what was described in the minutes as the ox cart pilgrimage. And it says ox carts were provided with us. And they're rather small affairs and go 2 miles an hour. I want you to note the height of the ox carts. About the top of that wagon, that little covered wagon, is about 6 feet. And if you look, it's very high up. So really, you probably have 3 feet inside there. They're not very wide at all. Very cramped. You go down 2 miles an hour down terrible roads. It's quite a sacrifice. Here is the pastor at a meeting in one of those, probably in that tabernacle, and he had part of the audience from his ox cart pilgrimage, and he gave a talk on the destiny of man. After this, of course, they were exhausted, and they caught a picture of them napping at the traveler's bungalow, some well-deserved rest. Here they are making ready to get in, and you see the pastor standing there as they open up the back of the ox cart. Now, if you look at it, you realize how short that is, so you'd have to be kind of bent over as you sat in the bottom of that ox cart. And so here the pastor is getting in, and I believe that three of them got in this very small cart to travel, so it's very, very crowded. Don't ever complain about economy class on an airline. And here they are going to another town where they gave a talk on the signs of the times. So they're going around to various villages. If you want the illustration of the yoke, there you have it right there with the two cows that are pulling the ox cart. And there's Brother Wilson looking for his wife in one of these little ox carts, trying to find which one she's in. Once again, they were struck by how humble and simple their lifestyle was. And these were just some travel pictures. Be it ever so humble, there's no place like home. They were taken by the amount of manual labor, mixing mortar. They were taken by how everything was done right on the streets. So making pottery, mixing curry, and carrying water on their heads. All of these things kind of impacted them as they looked at how humans were used as beasts of burden. And on this picture, it said, not an automobile garage. So this is where you parked your ox cart, and then you fed your ox, I guess. And this was a very simple house that was not that unusual in this region of India. So you see the very simple conditions under which people lived. And then there were, of course, some little better class ones that were built out of either concrete or adobe with thatched roofs. And, oh, by the way, there he gave a talk on who is Jesus. So you see, once again, very active. Here's Pastor Russell leaving the bungalow. And, of course, all the Indian brethren are there. And he talked about how they ran to and fro and that the natives were crowded into these train cars. If you look to the left, you'll realize that's a train. And we've all seen pictures of how they jam in and sit on the roofs, and every available inch is taken. There is no personal space. So that's how travel is even today in India. They were quite taken by the simple lifestyle. And one of the captions on this one was, "Men and women as beasts of burden." So I think he realized as he was shedding his Western cultural ideas, he realized as he was traveling how much of the world was still in this very primitive condition where men and women were beasts of burden. They get a shave on the street, goldsmiths working on the street. They continued on to Madras. And here's the native train station in that city. And in Madras, there was another class, and they all gave talks on parables of the kingdom. And this was one where they went through, in Matthew, a number of the parables of the kingdoms. This is one, if you read the convention report, you will see the details. While there, they ascended the steps at St. Thomas, and obviously this was built by the English. And here's the pastor standing on the top. And it says, tradition had it that about 52 A.D., the apostle Thomas came to this part of the world and worked and preached until he was killed by the Brahmins. They continue now to Calcutta. And they were quite taken by the conditions there, the crowding and just the crush of humanity. And as a public service at Victoria Hall, he gave a talk on the great hereafter. Undoubtedly, you know, thinking about the Hindu culture, how they've got reincarnation, and undoubtedly he was giving this to help counter that and give people a different concept. And he saw both Hindu and Mohammedan mosques in this very crowded area. And he said in this one little area there were over 2,000 temples and shrines. And even the brethren today will tell you that one of the things that you notice when you go to India is that everything is a god, and they have, you know, they have temples to rats and you know, snakes and basically anything in the world. There's thousands of gods, and how pagan that is. So how refreshing to see a core of brethren amidst this really pagan area where anything could be a god, to see the one and true living God. They continued on to Bombay, and this was their point of departure, seen there. Now, they'd originally intended to go to Central Africa. You see the red lines that go down to where they had intended to go, but because of timing, they had to be back to the General Convention in, I think it was in May. They went ahead and accelerated their plans and just went on to Alexandria. And here they are on the deck looking out. India had been brutal. Travel in India was not easy, and it was not pleasant. You know, it's very humid. It's equatorial. A lot of bugs. Not a lot of room. And so undoubtedly they were probably happy they had been there and had the experience, but also a little relieved that they could get to conditions a little more as they were used to. And so here's some pictures that were set out about Egypt in the time, and some of the pyramids in the background, and a picture of the Great Pyramid from that time. And here's the pastor. Now he's wearing a black bowler and a white trench coat, and he's on a camel getting ready to ride out to the pyramids. And when they got to the pyramids, now once again you can identify him by his hat and his beard. And so here we see him. And he gets the personal tour by Brother Edgar. So Brother Edgar met him there, and you'll remember he, pyramid passages and so forth. Really the expert on this. And so giving him a personal tour, that's something I wish I could get. And here we see how they would have to ascend the Great Pyramid if they were going to go up to the top. Of course they did not, but it was an arduous trip, none the same. Here's the pastor, and remember, he was either 62 or 63 at this point, and he's helping Brother Pyle get up the pyramid. They're trying to get up to the entrance to the descending passage. And Brother Pyle's quote was, "I would give a dollar if I had not started." Of course, that's what he said at this point. I think once they got in the pyramid and they were given the personal tour and went through all the passages, I imagine that that was quite an experience. And here's the entrance of the descending passage. And here's the pastor standing there. Brother Edgar is right next to him. And they're discussing their tour. And Brother Edgar gave him a personal tour and went down the descending passage, the ascending passage into the great gallery, up into the king's chamber and so forth. So they really got a tour. And undoubtedly we're discussing the God's monument stone. And here's the pastor on a camel. You can make out his hat and his face. His trench coat kind of fades into this sphinx there, right out in front as they're leaving the area. And here he is on a camel riding to the ruins of Memphis, and a couple of the brethren there as well. And by some of the monuments, you know, they were just really impressed by the size of these monuments. And so here they are waiting for a motor car. Now, once again, he's changed into his more European garb, and they're waiting for a car at Alexandria. And they say goodbye to Brother Edgar, who obviously remained behind to continue his research on the pyramid. They proceeded on to Athens, Greece, where they met with some of the brethren. And the Greek brethren assisted them in Athens and Corinth. And here they are at the Parthenon. You see the pastor in his top hat. And the comment under this picture was kind of interesting. Pompey's Pillar. No monkey built this. And, of course, you'll remember that this was the time of the big debate over evolution versus creation. And here he is descending Mars Hill where the Apostle Paul preached. And here they are on top of Mars Hill. And they actually had a little service up there. They sang before the remarks. And the pastor gave remarks on if there is no resurrection. Of course, what the apostle had given on that very point. And here's the pastor sitting down just before the remarks, and you can see the city of Athens in the distance. So once again, remember that part of this was to document as a travel log to perk people's interest and consequently also give them the message of truth. And so here they are listening to Pastor Russell talking on that, and he's standing right in the spot where Paul preached. Here they are coming down the steps, descending Mars Hill, and here they are on a rock where Demosthenes orated. And they also went out in front of Socrates' prison as well, and you can see the bars on the cave right behind them. They continued on and to St. Paul's Greek Cathedral where Pastor Russell preached. Once again, he took advantage of wherever he was to preach. So he would go in a Greek cathedral and preach there as well. And they went to a stadium. Now they're seeing some historical sites that seated 50,000. And the pastor and General Hall are sitting in the king's and queen's seats. And there they had a public meeting on Take Up Thy Cross. Now, they went on to the next Greek city, and there was a brother that was sick and couldn't meet, so he went to the home to encourage the sick, and while they were there, they had a question meeting. So you see, on this trip, they were constantly giving of themselves, doing all the things the scriptures said, taking care of the poor, helping and encouraging the sick, and being of service however they could be. They went on to Corinth, where they gave a talk on which is the true church and where are the dead. And once again, that's at that church. They proceeded on to Paris, and it was interesting. He said, here we met with a little class of international Bible students in that great city. And this is actually kind of typical of the Western world today, whether it be Europe or the United States. It's affluent, so there isn't a lot of interest. And Pastor Russell really gave a trip report at this time in Paris. They went on and proceeded to London, and they were there for about a week. On Sunday, Brother Russell spoke to the friends in the London Tabernacle. During the week, he met with various places nearby at which Pastor Russell spoke. Not a lot of details given. So this is a typical trip. Towards the end, you get fatigued. You don't take as many pictures, and you don't put out as much in the way of message. And here the friends are singing as they sail from Liverpool and waving away. Now, it originally said what the purposes of the tour were. This is one of the paragraphs from the convention report. It says, immediately following this event, we were given increased momentum, truth by thus making for himself and his sermons of more international reputation. And then it continues, many of the newspapers thereafter sought the privilege of publishing his sermons, while those who had been previously disposed to try them out were glad of the opportunity to renew their contracts. Now, you'll remember this is right before the photodrama came out. And so this was important because it helped with revenue as well to support that effort. So thus the Lord guided the hand at the helm in order that the work at that time might go grandly on. And so you see the focus here was that the work was to go grandly on. Now, this is actually a picture of the St. Paul Enterprise from 1917. So after the pastor died, the green line outlines the percentage of that religious page that was given to Pastor Russell. Now, who is no longer on the scene, and you see the sound of the joyful trumpet, great worldwide witness for the truth, and then, now in this time frame, the photodrama, a masterpiece. And so you see how this really worked out for the pastor and for ultimately for the glory of God. So the objectives were to understand the social and religious conditions, to evaluate the results, and to draw international attention to the truth movement. And all of these objectives were met. This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world. That was the theme, and that's what they did. And we're glad to say, even down to our day, the work goes grandly on.